I'm here today with Blake Hinson, and if you don't know who he is, look him up. I'm Gary Upton. If you don't know who I am, you look me up too. We are chatting about base rosin.
Yeah, love base rosin. Well, love some base rosins at least. I think we were basically kind of trying to talk about what we expect from rosin, what we hope to get out of potential future rosins, and just kind of where the state of things are. So I mean, like, personally, I'm a Pops kind of guy right now. Pops is my lifeblood as of where we stand. The reason I like Pops is because Pops is pretty consistent. That's one of the best things about it, is that I can usually count on it being what I need it to be. It's very sticky. It's a very sticky rosin, and it gets a lot of, it gets, honestly, I can tell you the truth that when I first started playing bass, somebody handed me a cake of Pops, and I thought, I don't really want this. You know, like, it didn't really strike my fancy.
Because it was like maple syrup or something?
Well, it just didn't strike my fancy. The rosin reflects the play. I think anybody who tells you that one cake of rosin will do everything for you is somebody who doesn't do everything, you know, because the truth is that when I'm playing an orchestra, I use a lot of different types of rosin, you know, like Pops has been the commonplace rosin for me, but I've also tried Weedoft a bunch. I've done Kolstein a fair bit. There's an Australian bespoke rosin that I've tried.
You said you started on Carlson?
I started on Pops, actually, and then I drifted towards Carlson because, for me, Carlson exhibited something that I couldn't get on Pops, and that was the draw of the tone. One of the things that for me sometimes suffers on Pops is that you get a little bit more, I guess, a grainier tone in terms of lyrical sound.
I would call it, it's a little scratchy.
A little scratchy.
Maybe powdery.
Powdery is another way to think of it. Like, it basically, what it is it's just that when push comes to shove, you always have you end up having a grain to your tone.
Yep.
And I found that the Carlson's rosin actually was really good at mitigating that grain.
That sizzly, that, like, right, if you could ignore the acoustics of the bass. And you removed all the, you know, had a filter to take out all the subs and all the mids and all that, and you could just hear the hair meeting the bow. To me, I think what you're saying to me is, like, I can hear that.
Yeah.
Literally where the string, and again, we should account for, just for listeners without going too far, I mean, every bass is different. Every setup, every bridge, every adjuster, then string choices, string lengths. You know, that, and then physically the bows and the bow hair. So we're trying, like we talked about our scientific experiments, we're talking about one variable and we're talking about that rosin. But you're saying that the Pops has that, that scratchy, that...
It has bow noise, is I think another way we call it. And so, bow noise is one of those things that it's a double-edged sword. I mean, a lot of the time as a bass player in the orchestral setting, we're kind of ebbing and flowing between being string players versus string rhythmic players. You know, we do have a certain rhythmic element, and I'm not making a case for slapping the bass or anything like that on the stage, but more so I'm making a case that there is something to be said for finding that homogeneity between your rhythm and your pitch. And sometimes when you're being, a bit more of a beef type of player, you might actually be more prone to getting, if everything's fortissimo around you, and it's a cacophony and you need to be heard in terms of a rhythmic sense, that bow noise is actually going to be very, very helpful. So it's not the end of the world to have that.
Makes me think of bad analogy, but an analogy. A drumstick versus brushes on a snare.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Is it that difference?
It's brands of impact. Yep. Yeah, it's different brands of impact. And you know, you might see we've all seen at some point in time, like, a guy with a really reduced set. Bass drum, snare drum, hi-hat. That's all he has, or all they have, I should say. And if you're a creative enough person, you can actually make that really work for you in a lot of different fields. But also, truth be told, is that it is limiting, you know? So the thing that I was going to say also about Carlson that actually drove me away from Carlson's rosin was the fact that you let that rosin sit on your bow for maybe, say, 5 minutes without playing. So, like, if you're in rehearsal and the violin section's being rehearsed for, you know, just 5 minutes, you come back to your bow and you try and get an articulation going, inevitably you're going to have to warm up that hair. You're going to have to warm up that rosin.
It's like the engine got turned off in the winter, the car got cold. Mm-hmm. And you had to start it again before you got in it because it literally kind of glosses over, right, the Carlson?
Exactly. And so same thing I could say is true for Nyman's. You know, like they're very similar in a lot of respects. I'd say
I'm told that they're the same recipe.
Oh, well, there we go.
I don't know if that's true. I can't.
Very similar if they're not the same.
There's old Polish guy that knew, I forget what, it was a name like Engelbert Humperdinck. It wasn't really that. But the guy at Nyman, I forget his name. Or the other, or he knew him, and he had said, I was asking the question, what's the difference, you know, because both packages come from the same place. What's the difference? Mm. And he was like, it's the same thing in two different cans.
Well, and if that's the case, then that's the case. And honestly, that's kind of what I found, is that they're very similar. Yeah. If they're not the same, they're very similar.
Yep.
You know, I don't, it's not, like, I think we also have to take into consideration, as per rosins are concerned, the player is going to dictate the need of the rosin. Because for me, I play in the New York Philharmonic, and so we're a pretty big playing orchestra. Stylistically speaking, we kind of land somewhere between the Philly on the string and Boston off the string style of playing. So we're kind of on-off-ish in our mentality. So I know I need my rosin to be quite tacky, because I need that spring factor. You know, I know I'm going to need a little bit of air into the sound, just because, I mean, frankly, it's the hall that dictates what the instrument has to sound like. And so if we're stepping far enough back, I'm basically thinking, okay, this hall, super resonant. Okay. This bass, super resonant. So what I need is a string that's going to cut through that resonance, and then I need a rosin that's going to allow me to access that tension instantly. Because if you have a really lax rosin, basically what it ends up doing is if you end up sinking into every articulation you do because you can't get that tack on the start of the note, well, effectively you've basically dismantled the use of the string. I've heard a lot of people lately, I like to check my proclivities. So Flexichord Deluxe strings, they've not always been my favorite choice of string. Mostly because I found the lyrical side of them to be lacking. But at the same time, somebody could be playing on an instrument saying, I need that hitting power. I need Flex Deluxe because Flex... I mean, I was actually... I don't even... This is a while back now. Maybe even a year back now. I was... There's a Sam Finlay.
Yep.
In the city. He and I were talking about Flexichord Deluxe strings. And he was telling me that, yes... Well, the string is designed exactly for what I thought it was, and it's designed to interrupt the Helmholtz motion.
So the thing that you were kind of complaining about is like, well, that was their intention.
That's the idea. Yep. The idea is that they want this string so the Helmholtz motion is the role of the string, and it's basically interrupted more effectively on that string. So you have less of the natural lyricism, but you have the hitting power, the articulation power, which for all intents and purposes is a lot of
So rather than the string, and I'm making a figure eight, right? Rather than the string being like, whoom, you're saying their design was to, whoop.
Yeah.
Whoop, to kind of get back on center, yeah, get back on center.
Exactly. And so what you end up getting is you end up getting that quick attack. So basically, like, I would say that, you know, if you have your strings kind of really articulating fast, and you have a super, like, let's just say, for me, I think the tackiest rosin that is out there right now is probably the Kolstein Soft, in the sense that that's the stuff that you put it on your bow, it feels like glue. So you're really getting an instant attack on that. So the point that I guess would make is that there's room for a lot of different types of rosins in there, but I think that it's less common for them to do everything that you want them to do. So for me, I like in my summer play, one of the things that I use as in New York, you know, we sometimes get a little bit more humid. I mean, everywhere gets humid in the summer, I guess. Well, not everywhere, but a lot of places do. So this would pertain to all of them. Is I actually take a cake of Bernadelle rosin, which is a cello rosin, and I actually crush that with a just in a little plastic bag. I throw it against the wall and make sure it's powdered, and then I either fold it into a cake of Pops rosin or something like that. Because what that does for me is that gives me the less grainy sustain. Which, you know, you can get with pops. And so it's, and also I, the thing I really love about it is the fact that it just, I like it because it powders super fast for the summer. You know, in the summer, I don't want to have my rosin. I mean, my, we all have had at some point or another during our summer seasons, probably this thing called unihair, where all your hairs kind of just seem to glob together because of all that sticky, sappy rosin. That's a nightmare scenario because effectively you just, you stop grabbing the string. And so the Bernadelle is my means to mitigate that. So,
I see.
Yeah.
So it, you almost use it as, you're using it as a powder on top of the pop. The pop.
I actually mix it in with the rosin outside.
It congeals into
it. Yeah, so there's a few different ways
I've
done
it. That's darker. That looks, that Bernadelle looks more like the Carlson or Nyman, but it's drier than Carlson.
It's dark-ish. I also would say it always matches the amber hue of the pops quite accurately.
Okay.
I'd say that what the my favorite time, and this is so I brought this in, and I remember Tim really, our principal base, Tim Cobb, he really liked this one. It was this Pops rosin where I rolled it out really thin, and then I sprinkled the Bernadelle, and then I rolled it up. And so it kind of looked like, it was like a confectioner's Pops rosin. And so as you would rosin through, if you'd make it through a layer, suddenly you get to a more powdery layer. It was more a fun exercise.
Wasn't there, didn't Carastro or someone put gold flecks in a rosin like that?
Yeah, somebody did that. Could, I mean, and I think that they made a case that it would be more, I don't know.
Sounded richer.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Even if it didn't sound richer, it definitely sounded richer.
It was a richer rosin. That's for sure. Yeah. So I mean, there's a lot of rosins out there. I mean, I'm trying to think of other ones that we haven't touched on. There's some hypoallergenic rosins that came out once upon a time, and my personal stance is that they were not at all what I needed.
Remember Pets? That was really dry.
Pets? I honestly don't. I think I used Pets once upon a time when I was a young lad.
There was that green one. Someone must have put
jade rosin
food coloring in it. Yeah,
the jade rosin. I have a very specific memory of a master class for Ed Barker at Tanglewood Institute, where there was a great player. She was rosining her bow, and it was super, super summery, and she had unihair, and she kept globbing on, and she couldn't grab the string. And this was, we were all in high school, so like a lot, we were extra nervous. And I remember she just kept putting more jade rosin, as if it would be the, and it was just watching somebody spiral down a toilet. It was just the worst. It was the worst thing. Get a different bow. Get less rosin. That's the game.
That's interesting.
So yeah, a lot of different facets of rosin that we can talk about.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, another time we'll try to break down maybe what we think is in them.
Yeah.
And what contributes to their, there, you know, you can obviously look at different cakes of rosin, and you could see certain stuff. You know, this is my technical side. I see very, very clear, almost like maple syrup. Different, obviously, we've got the colorations of the, you know, the dark grade and the amber and all that stuff. And then you see some of the rosin that's murky. And I have my opinions on what that is and why they're doing that. And also then with like the Carlson and the Nyman, why it goes on the bow. Mm-hmm. And why after it cooling off period, it glosses over. I'm pretty certain about something on that one, but we'll talk about that later.
My question is, are you hungry for rosin? Is that a thing that you're tempted by at all? Or?
Yeah, I think it's something that I enjoy always finding why things do what they do. It's certainly the tool that players are using. And I'd like to get under the hood and figure out and ask questions and, you know, dig around in finding, you know, when I started doing bases and asking questions, you know, 10, 15 plus years ago, a lot of the answers that I heard disappointed me that were because, well, why? Oh, because that's just the way that Hans did it before we did it. And I'm like, well, why did Hans do it that way? Oh, well, he heard from a farmer in the village over in, you know, Tyrol that they should do this XYZ because, and I'm like, well, why did he establish that data point? Well, we don't know. Okay, well, I'm going to take that data point and throw it out the window and figure out why I think it should do what it does. And that's my interest, even on something like this, of like rosin. I'd like to apply that, the thinking, and let's come up with a little matrix as to this causes this, and this causes this. This ingredient does this. When we put more of this in, it does this. And I want to break that down. That's my answer too.
I'm thrilled to hear about it as you get any deeper into it. Because honestly, I'm base nerd numero uno. I love I love talking about just like. It's just fun to talk about all the things. I mean, I know so many colleagues over the years who have done a similar path to what I've done, in the sense of they've tried a lot of rosins, and then it's hard to get on the same page sometimes. And I sure. think oftentimes the science is the best way to do it. And so I'm thrilled that you're interested in not just looking at making, you know, like making an approach at rosin and seeing like. What do you do? But also just looking at the actual principles behind it.
Right.
So we can really determine what it is about what one specific rosin that attracts us to it.
Right.
Not just some ethereal, it feels good.
Yeah, it brings to mind for me, it's like I've heard, when I hear a statement, you know, like I've heard someone say like, I checked out Upton bases and I don't like them, right? And I don't mean that to go down a negative path, but it's like, well, my answer to that is which one?
Yeah,
because I do so many different things. Mm-hmm. Where you know, if I'm making you an instrument that's of the Mittenwald school versus the Brescian school, or something that's like your Italian bass, the ingredients and the combination of the ingredients, and then what I do with them is so different that if you're to tell me you don't like them in general, I'm kind of going. It's like you can say you don't like pasta, but I'm going to have a hard time if you tell me you don't like food, because mm-hmm. I see you breathing and living in front of me. So I want to apply that same mentality to rosin, where if, you know, not to say I want to make, if I'm going to go down this path, 27 different rosins to satisfy everyone, but I'd like to know what makes X result for the player on X string, input that back into the system, and see if we can't arrive at somewhere that, you know, has a pleasing effect, and obviously at the end of the day is an improvement upon something we're already using.
Totally, totally. Well, hey, man, I'm looking forward to it.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
That's Rosin Talk, and let us know if you have any questions, and we'll take it from there.
All right, peace, everyone.
See you.